Backseat Producers, episode number 83, the Back to the Future Trilogy.
This is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Tony.
You suck at doing it. You suck at starting, Anthony.
I'm sorry. I'll never do that again.
Hey, right, this is Tony.
This is Tony Deuce.
This is Adam. All right, let's roll into this because we got a lot of stuff to cover in as much time as we want to take to cover it.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody, even though it'll be far after Thanksgiving.
Yeah, it's probably going to be more like Happy Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
Yep.
Happy Christmas. Hanukkah.
Happy V3.
Happy Kwanzaa.
Yeah, probably.
Yep. Happy Valentine's Day.
Just covering them all in case I don't edit.
Happy Chinese New Year.
Excellent.
All right.
All right.
And we are talking about the Back to the Future trilogy today.
Yes.
I watched all three movies in the span. I started last night, finished the first movie, and I finished the second two today before I showed up here.
I did not watch the first one in preparation for this because
I've seen the first one
so
many times.
The first one, like the back of my hand. I mean, I've seen it a ridiculous number of times. And did you do any prep?
I have seen all of them at least 100 times.
Excellent.
A piece.
Excellent.
I love them.
I would like to recommend, however, if you have seen these movies before, go out and buy the box set.
You can get the box set pretty cheap now.
Yeah,
too.
It's like $10. Seriously.
Really?
Yeah, it's really cheap. Every one of the movies has an option you can turn on. It's called Universal Anecdotes. And what it is pop-up video-style notes that appear during the movie. And they're all fantastic. I watched all three with them on, and I was a better person for it.
Excellent. My advice is don't ever lend one of the three discs to a girl that you're attracted to. Because it's quite possible when you get it back, it'll jump and not work.
Ooh.
I'm just saying.
Fail.
Just saying, could happen. Could happen. Didn't happen to me necessarily, but you know,
not necessarily.
But it could happen.
It could happen.
Yeah.
I have no business, so let's just jump right into this.
All right.
Back to the Future 1.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
gotta be honest with you guys.
You know,
fantastic.
Well, it's about love and time travel. That's your
time travel romance.
The time travel was done. With the questionable exception of the slow changes to the time stream.
Yeah,
I think it's probably one of the best examples of consistency in use of time travel in a film. It's really well done.
In the commentary, Bob Gale says that they wanted to use H.G. Wells' theory of time and space, and that you travel through time but not space, even though we know that it's not true.
Right.
For the purposes of storytelling, that was the most effective way to do
it. Yeah, and that's one of the things that in reading, because I've read The Time Machine, and that was one of the things that really captured my imagination is when they did travel in time, they did not travel in space, which could lead to some very disastrous results if you weren't careful.
Yes. Just erosion itself would screw you if you went too far.
Well, and you pretty much have to go to the same time of year.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're jumping into...
Yeah, there's a lot of
there's
complications.
There's no planet there.
Yeah.
So.
A lot of complications. I was going to go somewhere. Oh, one of the things that is going to be an overarching theme for me over the three movies is that...
How hot Lorraine is?
Leah Thompson is really hot.
Yeah.
And I was really glad they replaced Jennifer in the second movie with Elizabeth Shue.
Really?
Yes. Oh,
Jennifer in the first movie is way hot.
No. She's medium
hot.
Yes,
she is.
She's medium hot.
But she's fair.
I disagree.
Elizabeth Shue, though?
Elizabeth Shue, she's even wearing...
I could
wearing
say things that will get me in trouble.
She's
here.
Wearing these hideous pants.
Look,
even
Elizabeth
the fact
Shue
that she's
is hot that. When she's Elizabeth Shue, but she's that redhead that's supposed to be Jennifer, and Jennifer in the first movie is way hotter. I just gotta say, you know...
I would break
that's
that
actually
woman.
Not the big deal I was gonna drop. You
I
know?
Would destroy her.
Well, might be true.
Anyway, but. let's just stick with the first movie first.
Okay.
Okay. One of the things that they do in the first movie that I absolutely love is the little things. And this is going to go... This is going to be a comment I'm going to make about every single one of the movies. I mean, they get down to the name of the mall is the Twin Pines Mall.
Okay? Yes.
He goes back in time.
The Lone Pine Mall.
He knocks out one of the pines. The mall name changes to Lone Pine Mall.
I know. It's awesome.
It's so consistent.
And it's subtle. I mean,
they don't mention it at all. Yeah, I wouldn't have even noticed it if they didn't have the pop-up video things on there.
You know
because
what?
They point out every single one of them.
I started... When we got the DVDs... Whatever, a couple of years ago when the DVDs came out, I sat down and watched with a critical eye just for the consistencies in the time travel because I'd never really done it before. I've seen the movie 100 times at least, but I never really watched it with a critical eye to the consistencies because I had also not probably seen it in 10 or 15 years at that point. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. They did such an incredible job with it.
It was fantastic.
I remember when I noticed it, I was 12. It was the fifth time I'd seen the movie, and I just bought it on a VHS for like $6 because DVD I think had just come out, and it was maybe Laserdisc had just come out.
Okay.
So VHS was worthless. So I went out and bought it, and I watched it I watched it like two or three times in like two or three days. Fifth time I saw it, I noticed the Lone Pine Mall thing, and I sat there and I rewound it.
Yeah.
You know, to get to the moment where it goes back to the first, because I thought, there's no way. And it's there. And I was like, that is awesome. It's Twin Pines Mall in the first 20 minutes. And then it's Lone Pine Mall.
Well, and then he blows right through it.
Yep.
Yeah.
He blows right over it. And they do so many little things that set up the plot in such a great way that if you're really not paying attention, you don't see it. And because you're like, how in the hell would he know that the clock tower was at that exact minute? You know, even growing up in that town, mm-hmm. he wouldn't know exactly when the clock
tower...
There is
a flaw with that.
No, there's not.
Well, there's a flaw in terms of when lightning strikes and... You know,
well,
the amount of time it occurs. I mean,
yeah,
that's
I mean,
one thing that, you know, hey, I should never watch the movie with my dad. That's
well,
what
I mean,
that's what
they don't from. Tell you that the lightning strikes at 11:04 or whatever. They tell you the clock stops at 11:04.
Okay.
So, you know, around that point that the lightning strikes.
But it has to be, you know, the timing has to be almost instantaneous.
Well, yeah.
And it is, and that's the magic of movies, but I just remember my dad dropping that on me, you know. I'm like, Dad, this movie's awesome. We watch, he's like, it doesn't make any sense. Lightning strikes in the fraction of a second. This could never work. I was like, Dad, you ruined the movie.
What else happens in the first one? There are so many, just the lot that they do, where he's walking through the courtyard in front of the courthouse... in 1985,
mm-hmm.
and then when he does the same thing in 1955, that's brilliant. Him and Crispin Glover have just an awesome relationship in terms of their mannerisms.
Yeah,
just like when he goes back in 1955, that's just fantastic.
Yeah, I meant to be wearing my "You're My Density" T-shirt, which is actually the T-shirt actually misquotes the movie because. The T-shirt I bought says "You're my density."
I'm your density.
I'm your density in the movie.
I mean,
which
your destiny?
Yeah, which I mean, that could be just trying to save their ass from copyright. So
right,
you know,
true.
So
you're gonna see some serious shit. Love that. That's
yeah,
my favorite line from the entire series.
You know, I just dug how they set that whole thing up. With every character, and every character mattered, especially in the first movie. Pretty much anybody that had a talking role,
mattered.
You saw that character. There was some escalation of the plot. It moved everything forward, and nothing was wasted.
I think the great thing about it is it's a comedy.
Yes. And
so even the smallest roles are there to provide for lighthearted, you know, comedic elements regarding why this guy is in, you know, complete cultural disconnect
right.
with the people he's around.
Yes.
You know, one is, the best is the guy waiting on him at the diner,
mm-hmm.
and then Goldie Wilson, who ends up becoming the mayor.
Right.
And all of that.
Hey, that's, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I like the sound of that.
That's great. That stuff is awesome, you know. And so I think it's very helpful that at the same time they're trying to be funny, they can do two things with one character. They can
right.
forward the plot. They can also throw a punchline in. And
yeah, because you see a lot with him, his mom.
Yeah.
Because his mom's like, oh, when I was your age, I never talked to a boy or sent a call to the boy. That whole scene was so weird. And he had that uncomfortable...
what was it, George? Bird watching? What, Lorraine?
What?
What?
And then... Oh, that's brilliant. I don't have anything else to say. That's brilliant. And then Crispin Glover went crazy.
Crispin Glover was always crazy. I think he just reined it in for this movie.
I didn't know that they didn't use him for the other two movies.
Yeah, they didn't, because they couldn't strike a deal with him. He wanted something exorbitant. And, you know, what's funny is, according to Zemeckis and Gale...
I mean, they only really needed him for one scene in the second movie, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they did something in the third movie, too.
Not remembering, but anyway.
In the second movie, they turn him upside down.
Yeah.
So no one would know.
Right.
In the first movie, he wanted to do some really crazy stuff with the new George McFly in the second future.
Right.
When they get back. But Zemeckis was like, that's insane. There's no way. That doesn't even make any sense. So he reined it in, but then he thought he was a star, I guess, after the first movie, so he made unreasonable demands,
I guess,
on the second one. So he did go on to star in the movie The Doors as Andy Warhol. I mean, I don't know
what that means, but I'm gonna go ahead and nod.
Well, it's such a bit role. I'm not being
knowingly.
Sarcastic.
And silently to
You speak a lot in your silence.
I do. Let's go ahead and move on to the second one as well.
Do we have to?
Second one's my favorite one.
Yes! It's not such a shock after all then.
Yes.
I was just going to say that.
The second one is not.
The second one is the best one.
The second one is the best one.
Second one is the best.
No. Okay. Why do you think it's a mess?
I nearly got stoned at a party for saying that.
That's tame. That's painful. You know, she stoned Melina, so I turned it on today to watch it, and she's like, I don't think I've ever seen this one. And I'm like, are you serious? Did you just say that? I don't remember any of this. And I'm like,
you know, I remembered it. I remembered it not fondly, and I was not disappointed in my memory.
What?
It was just, it didn't live up to the first one for me.
Why?
Because it was a throwaway line at the end of the first movie that they felt compelled to push the goofy story. And the characters, that they advanced those characters in a way that just didn't make any sense. The Marty McFly character and his wife, they just didn't make any sense in the future, the way that they portrayed him. And I know they gave the story of how it happened in that really ridiculous expositional way.
Mm-hmm.
Grandma telling the story again. And it just felt really stilted.
Yeah, if Grandma hadn't told the story, I think it would have been better, because there are so many context clues to what happens.
Yeah.
That, like, when he's playing the guitar, he starts playing it, and he looks at his hand, and he can't close his hand right.
Right.
And so when he starts playing, it sounds like crap. And then What's-Her-Face recognizes needles, but you've never seen them before.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's so much... They hint at so much in that whole future house scene that if she hadn't gone through the exposition, it would have been a lot better.
Yeah. I mean, it almost feels like somebody sent a note and said, this is confusing. We need to know why all this is happening. And it just it really cheapened that whole part, and it also turned that whole sequence into let's show off the brand new technology that no one's ever had before. Wow. And that was the whole reason for that scene.
That was the only scene that was, I thought.
And it was just wanking on the special effects.
That's not. Now that future scene, you mean the one where everyone's at the dinner
table.
Room.
At the dinner table, yeah.
Now to me, that's not why they did it. To me, the reason they did it was because it was hilarious. The idea of Michael J. Fox playing Senior Marty and the son
and the daughter.
That was hilarious. Melina.
So that's the reason it's there.
Melina's like, oh my God, his daughter looks like a man. So I was looking through the credits and I'm like, that was Michael J. Fox playing his daughter.
I mean,
that's hilarious.
You gotta remember at the time it was made, but the point Eddie Murphy was doing things like that all the time.
No.
Yeah.
No.
The movie was made in 85.
No. Back to the Future 2 was made in 1990.
No, Back to the Future
5 years.
No, it wasn't.
Back to the Future 3 was made in 90.
It was made 1 year after 2. So it's either 90 and 91. They were made at the same time. Or 89 and 90.
Time out. They were made at the same time.
Right.
It released.
But they were released
right
in subsequent years. So it's either 89, 90 or 90, 91. I don't remember which, but the bottom line is that
but to that point, nobody had done a sequence where you had two characters that were played by the same person on a screen where they handed stuff to each other.
That's true.
And that was the first
time. They handed stuff to each other. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Coming to America.
Biff hits himself.
But nobody remembers Coming to America? I mean, come on. Eddie Murphy was doing that.
Those are cut sequences. He wasn't on the screen at the same time.
But the point is, at that time, the device was very funny. It's not as funny now. But
hell, that's been done a long time before that.
Well, fair enough.
I didn't even think that was the humor of the situation. Just kind of seeing where things were. And I didn't find that whole sequence as humorous as other sequences, but I thought that sequence was awesome because they didn't tell you aside from the grandma, there was so much hinting at things, but not explicitly stating them. There was so much subtlety to those scenes.
Yeah. I tell you, one thing that strikes me as interesting about the future as they portrayed it, it's 7 years from now. In our real time.
Right.
We've got most of that technology, with the exception of the hovercraft. I mean,
actually, we do have that technology. They just don't have a license to test it in the United States because it's a safety hazard.
Right.
Yeah. I've heard that, too.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. But,
but I mean, as far as Marty Jr. walking into the big screen TV and saying, show me channel this and this and this. What strikes me as hilarious about that scene is he reads off numbers and he says, and the Weather Channel. It's like nobody ever knows what channel the Weather Channel is.
Yeah. Well, at the time, that was a punchline, too. But now it's so realistic, it's not even funny.
Yeah.
I mean, how could he watch? Because he had all the sound going at once.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's, but it you know what? Once? I could do it easily.
Yeah, exactly.
Just because the internet has made me so ADD for content that if I'm not listening to something all the time, I feel like I'm wasting the
exactly
time.
Right. I'm seeing things, but I'm not hearing something, so I'm missing out. Somewhere.
That's not why I think this movie is fantastic. I think the seamless integration with the scenes from the first movie are what make this movie. The entire sequence where they go back in time and are trying to take the book from Biff. And it's woven into the story of the first one.
That was good.
When they didn't originally plan the two plots to coincide is fantastic.
Yeah.
I think my biggest problem is the whole setup to get
to the book.
Because they had to. It was just so forced. I mean they did it to themselves by the throwaway line at the end of the first movie.
Well,
and they couldn't just rewrite history.
I guess I sound like Zemeckis' Bat Boy, but because I listened to how the evolution of the movies or whatever. Right. Zemeckis made two promises to himself as a director. I'm never going to make a sequel, and I'm never going to make a movie about the future. That's what he says. He made these promises to himself. So the studio says, all right, Back to the Future was wildly successful. You guys wrote it. You directed it. We want Back to the Future 2. Zemeckis says, one, I don't make sequels. And two, I don't make movies about the future. And as you know, in the line, they go to the future. It was a joke.
Right.
It was a throwaway joke.
Yeah.
And they say, well, we're going to make it without you then. So you can either control how this movie's going to be made and, you know, control the direction of the franchise you've created, or we're going to make it with or without you. So he said, okay, I'll make it. So he, when writing the movie, his idea was to get out of the future as quickly as possible because he knew he didn't want to make a movie about the future.
I don't.
And so that's where they got the idea to go into the first movie.
Let me ask for a clarification. Are you saying that your problem with the future is the book plot or the kid plot that gets them there? Because the kid plot that gets them there is really stupid.
Yeah, it's the kid plot.
It's so dumb.
The kid plot that gets them there.
It's your kids. Okay.
Yeah, and
we'll be better parents.
There's some really weird inconsistencies with the way they kind of play fast and loose with the time travel. Mm-hmm. As far as they left the dog and the girlfriend in the future, but that's okay because everything will just write itself.
Hey,
and it's like, wait a minute.
That was kind of weird.
That makes no sense, because if that was the case, then the whole premise of the first movie was ridiculous because history should write itself anyway.
I agree with you there.
They broke their rules.
I don't have a defense for that.
Yeah, they broke their rules.
Well, why give Elizabeth Shue more lines? You have to pay her more.
They're basically saying,
what about that, Tony?
Nothing would happen to her, and she'd end up right back where she was, regardless.
Well,
of how events change, which doesn't even make sense.
Let me put it this way:
no, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
I can see where they're coming from if you go from the assertion that the timelines change and they don't affect Doc Brown and Marty because they're in the DeLorean. While they go back.
I still
back.
Think that's even kind of weak.
It's totally weak, and I completely agree with you.
But until time catches up to him, eventually, you know what, though? I take it back. Because, well, no, I don't.
Don't take it back because in
because
1955...
Eventually what will happen is...
Don't take it back because in 1955, after Doc Brown sends Marty McFly into the future, he knows how the time machine is constructed. He knows that in the future, he will send Marty McFly back into the past,
right.
And he knows this in 1985.
Yeah.
Because at the point where they meet, that whole course of event is set. So you kind of have to take that with a grain of salt. But
two things, though. One, these are comedies. I mean, right off the bat, I don't take them seriously as science fiction films.
The problem with that assertion is you don't put the level of detail into it of the Lone Pine, Twin Pine Mall thing. You don't, yep. And you don't.
Totally,
I mean,
agree.
They didn't even.
But
talk
the Lone
about
Twin
that.
Pine thing is actually a punchline.
That is.
That's what's funny.
It's a punchline, but they don't. But they don't call it out. You have to watch the movie multiple times to see that. Unless you are ridiculously observant, you don't put that level of detail into it, and not follow that detail through.
My biggest complaint with the second movie...
They created a
second
stigma.
Thing was that... One, it is a comedy, and you may not agree that the standard is more lax, and that's fair. But then, two, the whole premise of Back to the Futures 1, 2, and 3 is ridiculous. That by doing one thing, you can control the intended consequences of something 30 years later. Or 30 years behind.
That's not,
it's called the butterfly effect.
Yeah, that's not
ridiculous. That's not ridiculous. And
No. The butterfly effect is chaos theory. The butterfly effect is not intended consequences. It's unintended consequences.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's true.
That.
That's true. But at the same time...
In the third movie, they steal the train.
So,
but there's no difference
in the
future.
The whole thing is ridiculous. Because the idea that you can change or govern what's going to happen or what could have happened when the whole idea of chaos theory is that you can't predict what's going to happen makes the whole franchise in some ways ludicrous. So
well,
I think
I agree with that. My big problem with it is that I can accept the little inconsistencies. I can't accept the big inconsistencies like you can't see yourself, otherwise you'll cause a paradox. But then Biff Tannen goes back in time and sees himself.
And talks to himself.
But he doesn't know he's himself. That's the catch.
No, the younger version doesn't know he's himself.
The bigger one does know he's, but he's the one with knowledge.
Okay, see, but the younger version of Elizabeth Shue knows that she's herself, and she sees herself, but there's no consequences there.
The difference presumed is that...
It's not true. It's not a true reality.
Right.
Or it won't become a true reality because they're going to change it.
And not only that, but the distance is not different enough. And so here's actually, the other thing. It's not coincidental because they do see each other, and then they just pass out, which is what's so funny about... that line, because
what's I'm his old, name I'm says, young, funk.
What's his name says? One. I see one. Two possibilities.
It'll
one,
either destroy the galaxy,
pass out, or it will destroy the entire universe. Granted, that's a worst case scenario. It may very well be limited to our own galaxy. And then Marty McFly says, well, that's a relief. Which is awesome.
So anyway, loved the entire sequence at the high school in Back to the Future 2. All of that was fantastic. That's pretty much all I have to say about that movie. Other than what we've already talked about.
Obviously. Another big point of disappointment for me was that I saw it in the theater. And
really?
And didn't know it was coming. Didn't know the part 3 coming next year.
Seen them without
that. I mean, it was shocking. It was like, what are you doing to me? It was the same disappointment I had at the end of Empire.
Yeah, but the second act.
Never not seen these trilogies without the ability. I guess that is different because your perspective is kind of clouded by the fact that...
I mean, you don't have the internet, so you don't know that they're working on it at the same time. You don't have... you live in a cloud.
Right.
In the 80s.
I read a series of books where there was a cliffhanger, and then the next book didn't come out for several years after.
Uh-huh.
Well, people who pick up the series of books now have a different perspective on the end of the book in question to the resolution of the cliffhanger, and it's like, dude, you don't even understand how intense this cliffhanger was. Yeah, why? They don't need to, because they just flipped the next book open and then just mm-hmm. kept reading, and it's like, ugh.
It's like watching watching any of the episodic television.
Yeah, it's like watching
Heroes.
Week
to week.
You will never stop after every episode and say... You'll never have that theory session with your friends.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Right. And that's, I think that's something you lose.
I agree.
In having the media available to you immediately. I can't tell you how many people have seen TV shows and was like, boy, I sat down one weekend and watched the whole series and it was like, I didn't get it.
I did that with Buffy last week.
I didn't see what people enjoyed about this. It's like, you didn't have time to stop and think between every episode and have a week.
Didn't let the season
to let it sink in, to let it, to let it grow.
When I read the cliffhanger, God, I hated it. But you know what? I'm a better person for it.
Yeah. So you can kind of see the point that I'm making.
I see the point that you're making now. Yeah, I'm on board with that. I'll buy that for a dollar.
It was disappointing. It was.
I've heard universally that that's the case.
Yeah.
You know about it.
I liked all the future stuff though.
Yeah, I mean, the future stuff was funny. I mean, it was...
Yeah.
Jaws, the hoverboards, the manure.
Something's very familiar about
this. Yeah. My biggest complaint was the inconsistency with the Marty character. And then Marty Jr.'s character was
so ridiculous. Stupid.
It was just... I mean, it was parody where no... I mean...
Where no precedent had been set.
Parody or parody?
Parody.
Like, the joke.
The joke.
Okay.
Yeah. Biff's character is a joke.
Yes.
I mean,
he's a running joke for the entire series.
He's just a lunkhead.
He's always the antagonist.
Right.
Wait.
Except for the future Biff.
All of the characters are jokes except Marty. Marty's the straight man. Everyone else around him, usually...
But Marty's also kind of a moron in some of these cases, too.
He's not a perfect person.
Right.
But... He's the straight man. He's not.
But he does.
He
also doesn't think of the consequences of being in other time periods.
Well, one of the things
he should have known.
I'll tell you the
that
one
there's
thing
not
that
Diet Cola
about,
in the past. He should have known that there's not ice water in
that
the
was,
past.
That was
a ridiculous
guy. He is
gag.
18 in these movies. He's supposed
so
to be 18.
So
he
what?
Looks like he's 50.
50. That's actually the opposite. I think he's, 50? He probably looks like he's only 30 now. But look, if he's an 18-year-old who's just in a rock band and isn't incredibly self-aware, like, all of us geeks probably are, then you can understand why he would be completely, you know, devoid of that kind of relevant knowledge.
And you do kind of have to assume that in their world, there wasn't...
You know what, I'm sorry, that's not true, because he grew up in the 70s. He grew up in the time period, you know what, though? That character would have grown up in the 70s. He would have been born in the late 60s. He would have seen the rise of Tab. He would have seen...
Hang on a second.
Yes, Diet Coke. But you know what? You're also robbing him of the benefit of having years of time travel movie experience. It's not culturally relevant to him at the time.
And not only that, but he's not even fully aware that he traveled through time yet. When he sees the paper, he says, "It's not true." He walks into the diner. He orders a Tab. He orders a Pepsi Free.
Right.
He's not even fully, you know, he's not comprehending everything we're comprehending as a character, you know.
He's also not a dork. No, I'm being completely serious.
Yeah, I know.
That without, I mean, honestly, look to Back to the Future as reference material for if you go back in time. Those are tropes to avoid.
Yeah.
It set up a lot of the tropes culturally.
Yeah.
So,
it's like the godfather of time travel.
We have the benefit of having the requisite knowledge of Back to the Future that we're drawing on to say, well, you're stupid because you should know this from Back to the Future, which is what you're in. So I can forgive a lot of his stupidity in terms of the time travel.
In the first movie.
In the first movie, you're right. Oh, yeah. In the second movie and the third movie, he has no excuse.
It just keeps getting... He just keeps going. Yeah,
but it all happens in the span of...
But... Late in the first movie, he also knows how he's influencing the past by getting up on stage and saying, "Okay, we're going to do some rock and roll. I know this is not what you know."
No. I don't think he knows how he's going to influence. He just says, "What do I know that these people might know?" He's like, "Well,
but they can get them together."
Might, yeah,
and see, he knows that this is not the music they play. This is not. He tells them flat out, "Just follow me." Just go with it because you don't know what's going on. It is.
That is
hilarious. I can't tell you how many times when we were in bands, we just turned to somebody's like, "What key is this in?" And somebody would pull that line and just, "It's a blues riff in B. Just watch me for the changes and try and keep up, okay?" Like, I mean, you can't tell you how many times you hear that. You know, it's just like one of those lines. You always say it. It's funny.
And, okay. Yeah, I mean, in terms of that, it just... I mean, not knowing music, it just was like, does that even make sense?
It does make sense, does it really? Actually, yeah. It's a blues riff and B.
Gotta put this on the table. Best part of the movie is easily when Leah Thompson is in that mostly low-cut halter top thing.
say that when she's in the dress in the 50s, that's the...
Really?
Yeah, because it's still low-cut.
I'm not digging the 50s style.
Yeah, but she has, like, nothing up here. I'm just saying,
I guess. All right, you want to move on to the third movie?
All right. Sure. Go ahead. I like the third movie.
It's the weakest, but I like it.
I like it too. I liked all the movies.
I like.
Yeah, how can you not like them all?
See, I like the third movie better than the second movie.
Big problem with the third movie for me.
Me too.
It's run on gasoline. It always has. And in the first movie, it's on empty. It needs nuclear power. Well, and by the third movie, he says,
yeah. Two different things.
Yeah, they explain that in the third movie.
The ICE is running on gas, but the time machine is powered on fusion.
That's not what they imply in the first movie.
Maybe
because you're looking at it through Marty's eyes, you don't know the difference, and maybe that's the point. But
that could be it.
In the beginning of the movie, of the first movie,
because
remember, he gets stuck, he has to hitchhike, and he looks at the plutonium chamber, and it says empty, and he says, and even when Doc is getting ready to fuel the car, he says, "Yeah, so what does this run on? Regular unleaded gasoline? Unfortunately, it requires something with a little more kick, plutonium." And so you get the impression that the whole thing's run on nuclear energy.
But they actually explain that pretty thoroughly in the third movie. And they flat out say, "Okay, so, you know, we've got the Mr. Plutonium, we're good." And he says, "No, no, no, no. The internal combustion
Mr. Plutonium.
The internal
Fusion.
Mr. Fusion, whatever. I don't care.
Regardless, it's a hilarious concept.
The whole point. It's the Mr. Coffee of, yeah.
They've turned, like, a nuclear fission-producing entity into a kitchen appliance.
That was
hysterical.
All right, so they explain that the internal combustion engine still requires gas. That's why they need to get up to speed. That, yes, we can power the...
I understand that that's how they explained it, but I got the impression from the first movie that he completely overhauled the internal combustion engine. Like, it's non-existent with respect to running that vehicle at that point.
I would agree. I agree and disagree. I agree that when it's on the ground, the ICE is working. However, when it starts flying, the whole hover mechanism is based off the Mr. Fusion.
Well, in the second one, but I'm talking about in the first movie.
At the end of the first movie, that's canon. Yes.
Oh, the Mr. Fusion. Yes. But I'm talking about when they first do the trial run in the mall parking lot. He says what does this run on? In unleaded gasoline? No, it requires something with a little more kick. So I get the impression that he just yanked the old style engine out of there.
I get the impression that he won't have a problem unless he has the plutonium, just because he says I won't be able to get back if I don't have the plutonium. Before he gets in.
Either way, I think it's a flaw, but I overlooked it because I like the movie.
My big flaw
is what's her face. But the thing is, they could have never finished the first movie.
Steen Virgin?
What?
Steen Virgin?
What's her face?
Mary Steen Virgin?
Yeah. Claire.
Okay, wait a minute. I want to go back for a second.
Okay.
I'm not done fighting this fight. How would he have driven the car?
What do you mean, how would he have driven the car?
How would he have driven the car in the past?
I don't know what you're talking about. I mean, if
Marty, how did Marty drive the car in the past?
With his hands. I mean, what do you mean?
Okay, they needed to power the fusion mm-hmm. generator
mm-hmm.
the flux capacitor
mm-hmm.
to jump. How did he drive to get to the point to get struck by lightning?
Here's my point. It's not about the jumping. The jumping, obviously, plutonium is required. The assumption in the first movie is that...
But how would he have driven it? That's my question to you.
That the engine was nuclear-powered and not internal combustion-powered. Not coal or oil-powered. It was nuclear-powered. Completely electric, in other words, in terms of how a nuclear fusion engine would work... It's essentially completely electric. And you get that impression from the scientist in the first movie, Doc Brown. He says, well, what does this run on? Gasoline? No, it requires something with a little more kick, plutonium. Then he gets stuck in the 50s, and he has to walk. And he looks at the plutonium chamber, and it says empty.
No. I think Tony's point is, how does he drive the car
how
after
he drives? Yeah.
He drives into the barn.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets back in, and then he drives it away.
The whole thing runs on nuclear power.
But he jumped. He used all the plutonium.
What do you mean? How does he use all the plutonium just because he jumped in time?
Because the car doesn't stop immediately after it.
That's your point. If there's an engine that runs on nuclear power, I mean, yeah.
And this is why your supposition is wrong.
Huh?
And this is why your supposition is wrong.
Well, regardless, it's clear up and through.
I don't understand why it's wrong.
Because he still was able to drive the car.
After he jumps.
He jumps. You're assuming that when he jumps, he uses all of the plutonium.
Yes.
I don't understand how that makes any sense.
It doesn't really make any sense.
It really doesn't make any sense. That as soon as Einstein jumps, he immediately replaces the slug.
Because you mean
He immediately replaces the plutonium. That's the first thing that they do because they have to.
I mean, it depends on
it, but it's. I understand what you're saying. That from the sequence of events, it's not clear.
Well, first of all, from a storytelling perspective, it doesn't add up. But if you want to get into the actual science of it,
I think it does.
I don't see any reason why.
I think it's just an assumption.
Fusion process, that battery isn't charged enough to run post jump.
Yeah, but the car's not the DeLorean is never the time machine. The time machine is always the flux capacitor.
Right.
Okay,
but the DeLorean is the only DeLorean runs on a nuclear fusion engine.
And my point is that the DeLorean is a completely separate entity that only is there to get the velocity of 88.8.
Yeah,
that is its only purpose.
Well, sure.
In fact,
but
they even toyed with the idea of making the DeLorean a refrigerator.
Right.
In the original script.
Right.
So it's so independent of the plutonium.
Well, the only reason I rest on this is the fact that I think there was a flaw in the storytelling in the third movie.
I think there was a flaw in the storytelling in the third movie, but it was more Clara than anything else.
I think it was the gas, the internal combustion engine. I don't believe it was ever a part of that DeLorean in the first two movies.
But you do need to have Matt on.
I disagree.
To discuss the new
I disagree systems. Because he wouldn't have been able to drive it.
No, I see. This is where I think there's a disconnect. Is because
I'm talking about the end of the movie when he's driving it to hit the lightning.
Oh, you're right.
Because he's driving that car, and the plutonium is on empty. They had established that. You said it.
Yeah, I did.
So how did he drive the car?
Walks. So then, yeah, how does he...
He got gasoline. I could just be remembering this wrong, but I swore he had gasoline at one point.
That's a good point. How does he...
drive the car to hit the wire...
Yeah, to get the...
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess you're right. Yeah. But they...
Now the third movie was excellent.
They don't make it very clear, though, man. I mean...
No, wow. It's smoke and mirrors. It's... But
that's most of the movies.
But what you said, it's a comedy. It's,
mm-hmm.
but they did have that. I think they had that thought through enough that they still had to be able to have him drive the car.
Yeah, you're talking about. You're not talking about just the science of him driving the car. You're talking about how did he even have fuel to drive the car?
Yeah.
To get the electricity he needed to go back in time or to go back to the future.
Correct.
Right. Okay.
Let's move on to Clara. Because that's my problem.
Three.
Okay.
Oh, it's time travel and romance, dude. You can't
No. It's so stupid. Okay, so she was supposed to die. Their history says she dies.
Yes.
Immediately upon arriving in Hill Valley. Okay? So then, Marty's talking to Doc, and he's like, dude, we gotta go back. You can't stay here. I can't take her with me. Because who knows what that will do to the history timelines.
Right.
She has no impact on the history timeline
exactly.
Because she was supposed to be dead.
She's Edith Keeler. And
well,
and,
yes,
yeah.
Well, one, what's
she should have? They should have done A City at the Edge of Forever and had her die.
Yes.
Or okay. Sorry.
2 points. One, it's not about the fact that she died had no impact. It's if she lived, what impact would there be?
But they wouldn't have seen an impact. They are
what do
living.
You mean?
She died. Their history said she died.
Their history said she died.
By virtue of taking her to the future, there would be no impact?
Not on the past.
Not
on the past.
There should not have
been
no
impact on the past.
I don't think the event of her dying precludes that there's no impact on changing the way she leaves that time.
The only thing that they explicitly say that she had any impact on was they renamed the ravine... after her.
Yeah.
Which is Eastwood Ravine.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious.
But then the other thing about it is... Well, shoot, now I forgot that second
part. And then regardless of that, he takes her away anyway.
Yeah, he does, because the conclusion of the film is that none of it matters. I mean, in some ways... The funny thing about the conclusion of all three films is that the first three films are not relevant.
Yeah,
the end of the third film.
And you know what? In time travel, that's exactly the way it should be.
Yeah,
probably.
I actually dug that. I mean, and they did it in that, you know, hammer it over your head. This piece of paper, the note is blank. Well, that's
the
because
the future is whatever you make it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But you know what? You know, the films are dated in that sense. But
I gotta be honest,
audience sophistication has grown since then. But it's still.
It's still fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't find anything dated about it. I'm gonna be honest with you.
You
Other
know
than
what,
the
you know what I really liked
stuff.
About the third movie and listening to the soundtrack, it sounded like an old 50s television western soundtrack. Like Bonanza.
Bum, 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 bum. Yeah, with the big orchestras. Yeah,
I mean, it sounded like I was watching
ZZ Top.
Big Valley. And
Well, I'm not talking about that.
I'm just saying they were awesome.
I'm talking more about the score, I guess, than the soundtrack. Yeah. But
I mean, they had two choices, essentially, when making a Western, which is essentially what they were doing. They could either make one from the 50s, or they could make one from the 60s, which has all the weird Ennio Morricone
right
kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And they chose to go with the...
the lighthearted,
yeah,
epic,
yeah,
over the top.
Yeah.
And then dress him in the outfit and send him back.
That was hilarious. What idiot dressed you?
I've seen Westerns, and Clint Eastwood looked nothing like...
That was hilarious. And then, Doc, what about those Indians over there? No, 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 no. You're not thinking fourth dimensionally. That was my favorite.
And then at the end, he's like, wait, I'm just going to go off this cliff and die. Marty, you're not thinking fourth dimensionally.
Yeah, I got a real problem with that.
And then I love the most rewarding line of all three movies is in the third one. When they're like, so that tombstone may not necessarily be someone else's. It may be yours. And then he goes, Marty goes, great Scott. I know. This is heavy.
I love the guy who plays Biff and all the incarnations of Biff is fantastic.
He is.
I don't know why he's not in anything else.
I don't know either.
Because he was so good.
And what I like...
Isn't he the guy who has the I'm Not Biff Tannen YouTube video or site?
I have no
clue. Where, like, everything they wanted him to do was be Biff Tannen again.
Oh, my God. I'll tell you, though, what I really liked was that they actually advanced that character in the future.
Yes.
And they did. Because when he went back in the past and was communicating with his 1950s self, and, you know, the young Biff says, I'm going to make like a tree and get out of here. He's like,
you sound like an idiot.
You sound like an idiot. Come on,
that's hilarious. I love all of the subtle jokes in the whole thing. Like when in the future, the manure truck is D. Doyle or whatever.
Yeah.
In the past, it's A. Doyle. So you know, B and C were in the middle.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is really cool is how they kept having Marty use pop culture to get out of things because people wouldn't have the reference for it.
Yeah.
Calling himself Clint Eastwood, letting himself be called Calvin
Klein.
Did
they ask Clint Eastwood to use his name?
Did they really?
And Clint Eastwood was like, yes. And then he thought it was hilarious.
That is awesome. That is very cool that, yes, that he would do that. The whole sequence with him saying that he was Darth Vader.
That was hysterical.
Though he was, I think he was supposed to be playing Van Halen, and I don't think it was, if I'm remembering right. But
I like the gratuitous use. But one of the things that I love about it is they use common insults, but they put emotion. Like, what are you looking at, butthead? Yeah. When he says butthead, he sounds like he means it. Yes.
This references to the earlier point you were making about pop culture. I like in the third one when Marty McFly says, hey, lighten up, jerk. And there's no such thing as a soda jerk yet.
Yeah.
So
everyone's looking
Mad Dog around. Just looks at him, shrugging his shoulders, and says, mighty strong words, runt.
That was hilarious. That's awesome.
All right.
I got nothing else on this.
I don't. I just
other than
the movies.
Other than, I will put this on the table. I think this is the best trilogy ever made.
You know what? I gotta admit, if this is a podcast, it's an excellent thing to bring up on a podcast. That's an interesting question. I don't know if I would agree with that.
I can't agree with it.
I mean, I like it a lot.
Trilogies you boys have to trump?
Godfather, and Star Wars.
Wasn't the third Godfather awful?
No, it wasn't.
It was different. It was not awful. It was different. It was unexpected. It was not a direction that people saw coming, and therefore it was disappointing to some people.
Here's one that actually I think would be the best trilogy of all time, but people can't agree whether it's a trilogy or not. The Fistful of Dollars trilogy, The Man with No Name, the Clint Eastwood movies.
Yeah, and
that would be the best trilogy, but they can't agree whether it's the same character or not. So
there's actually a trilogy of movies that I want to see that I have not seen yet, and I can't remember the names of the movies, but they're like the white, black, and red, and they're foreign films, but supposedly it's just an incredible trilogy of movies. That's what I got.
I haven't seen The Godfather.
Yeah, well, you probably need to see that before you make an assertion like best trilogy ever. For another set of movies.
Tony wants to toss out some red, black, and white thing, and he hasn't seen those.
That's a fair point.
I haven't seen them. It's just something I haven't seen, so I can't.
It's a good point. When you discredit someone other than me on the podcast, I think it's a good point.
Now that he's not the one being picked on.
Lord of the Rings? Lord of the Rings was great.
Lord of the Rings wasn't a trilogy.
But not. What?
It wasn't a trilogy.
Was 10 hours worth of movies in three.
I like the first one. I like the second one all right. The third one, it loses me at the part where the dragons do battle for 2 hours. Because I don't care.
What dragons?
The ones that fly down and attack the weird horse camel things that people are riding in massive military campaigns that last 2 hours.
I don't know what we're talking about now.
Have you seen the full version?
The
extended version of The Return of the King?
Dude.
It is ridiculously...
I know, I watched
overdone. It. Yeah.
I'm not going to disagree that it's overdone, but I don't remember very many dragons. I remember there was one wyvern that the...
Or whatever you want to call it.
There was a couple wyverns.
It flies, it destroys ground forces. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. I will pretend to accept your point, but... in actuality, disregarded completely.
Now, let me ask you this. Does Anchorman, Talladega Nights, and Blade of Glory suffice as a trilogy of average Joes?
It's more a trilogy than the Star Wars, the original quote-unquote trilogy is, because that's not a trilogy. That's
a sextology?
It's a duology, because there's only two stories. One, there's A New Hope, and then there is Empire Strikes Back / Return of the Jedi, which is actually one work, contiguous work.
Yeah, but we're talking about movies, Tony. I mean, we're not talking about...
And I got a point on the table.
I'm drinking, damn it.
Blades of Glory had a mostly nude scene with Jenna Fisher, which is win in my book in every situation.
So, arguably greatest trilogy ever, right? I mean,
I haven't seen any of those movies.
Oh, well, I'm just saying, you know, there's also some decent cleavage scenes in the other two excellent films.
Do they have
films.
Jenna Fisher?
No, but Jennifer very hot girls, you know.
I don't know.
Christina Applegate's in one of them.
I lost track of what we were talking about, and I was drinking.
Breasts. Best trilogy ever, and and girls with
Porky's,
lots of
one,
cleavage.
Two, three.
Porky's, one, two, three.
You know what? We all stand corrected tonight. Tony wins.
Revenge of the Nerds.
Never seen.
I would have to go back to Porky's.
Porky's, I think, is still around.
Police Academy, huh? I've never seen any of those either.
If we don't count the second one, The Exorcist.
Oh, I've not seen
the first one. The new one is the third one?
Huh? First and third. Only.
I know, but they came out with a new one a while back.
No, they didn't.
Yeah, they did.
I choose not to believe that. If it's if what you say is true, I choose
they
not to believe it.
They came out with a new one maybe 2005? 2006? Yes. Somebody in the chat room backed me up on this. They came out with a new...
The Naked Gun. Excellent point.
The Naked Gun was fantastic.
The naming of the Naked Gun movies wins
two and
hands down. 2.5 and 33 and a third. Boom. That is it. Just the names win.
Done.
I swear they came out with a new...
Would Darren say the Matrix trilogy?
Darren?
Darren's not here.
Darren's not here, but he was invited.
Hey. The Matrix trilogy, the third one, was dreadful.
Third one's the weakest one.
I can't wait till we have him
That's another one where I think the second one's the best one. I tend to be that
me
way.
Me too.
I tend to like the second movies in the trilogies. The Pirates trilogy, I like the second movie.
Me too.
Ooh. First Pirates movie is the best. Second Godfather movie is the best.
Yes.
I love the storytelling.
Yes, it is.
I love the storytelling.
It's a lot of touching
Hail Mary, full of grace. Not that I'm giving away what happens in The Godfather.
All right, are you guys finished here?
The scene where he has to pull the flaming rags off his arm after he shoots, genius.
It's pretty awesome.
Anyway, let's go on.
I don't have any.
What were we talking about?
Best trilogies ever.
We were talking about Michael J. Fox. We were talking about Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf? Is there a Teen Wolf 3? We put that in the running.
No.
I can assure you that under no circumstances were we discussing Teen Wolf in any permutation thereof.
Karate Kid.
Ooh. That's an excellent choice, but no. What about... Now, here's a good question. Is Chuck Norris is missing in action? Was there a Missing in Action 3?
Ooh.
I'd want this to not be true. Therefore, I will believe
it. For a while, there was only
so.
Three Rambo movies, even though there's only one good one. Oh, and it wasn't called
For a very
Rambo.
Short time, there were only three Rocky movies.
That's true.
Evil Dead. Wasn't
Evil Dead's an excellent point.
Evil Dead's not great.
It's not, but... Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, right?
Yeah, but isn't Evil Dead 2 just Evil Dead?
No.
No.
I mean, I've heard people say that, but it's not.
It's close a friggin' enough.
Not really.
I know this is true because in High Fidelity, they refer to Evil Dead 2 as Evil Dead 2, not Evil Dead.
Wow, that is pretty definitive.
I would say so. All right.
I got nothing else here.
I want to drink more. So we need to keep talking.
All right, well, let's just start recording another episode.
What movie have you guys seen that you want to talk about?
I want to talk about how awesome Changeling is.
Let's end this one.
Good night.
See you.